Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we are just over a week away from the NFL draft. It feels like we're about 17 months away from the Stanley Cup playoffs. But Adam Vingan will join us in 1 hour. He will join us every single Wednesday throughout the playoffs. Jonathan Hutton will join us at 1 p.m. Normally, he joins us at noon. I had a little bit of a shakeup today. So Vingan will normally join us at 1 p.m. on Wednesdays as the Predators make their way throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll hit on that with Vingan. We'll touch on the NFL draft with Jonathan Hutton. But Willie D. D. Mays are both here. How are we doing today? Happy Wednesday.
Hey, happy Wednesday. It didn't start off too well for me, but I mean, I take everything in stride, you know? I told you, Caroline, once again, woke up a little bit late. Didn't mind waking up a little bit late.
Oh, nice.
I think the dogs mind. They wanted to get outside, so I wake up, and I thought I rolled over on a remote while watching television last night and cut off the TV, and I was like, okay, cool. I'm glad I did. So, walking around the house, just minding my business, and I noticed that everything is off. And so I think it's just a power outage. Okay. So, I go outside, let the dogs out in the backyard. We walk around the house. I see the two houses next door. They're building. Their lights are on.
Uh-oh. What is going on?
And I thought to myself, yep, I forgot to pay for mail. Forgot to pay my NES bill. So that's...
This is not the first time.
It's not the first time. Because it's the only bill that I don't have on auto pay. Because those electric bills get, you know, they spike and I have to call the place. God, like, hey, listen, there's something wrong. You know, I just don't want them to take it out of my account. And then I have to go fight and try to get the money back. And, you know, typically when you have to fight to get your money back, you ain't getting your money back.
Uh-huh.
I would rather fight and then pay them once we've cleared everything up.
Don't go down without a fight, D-Mace.
Absolutely. So I did not have electricity. I almost had to take a cold shower. Eventually it came on. I called, came back on. So I'm great, but I take everything in stride. I just laughed about it this morning. Just went about my business.
What are you going
to
do?
Exactly. It's nothing I can do. Just hope they turn it on before I have to go to come here.
Because
I wanted to take a shower. Oh, wait. It was once I got off the phone with the lady, and she was really nice. It took about 5 minutes to come back on. She said,
Well,
it will take in between, you know, it can take up to 2 hours. And I'm thinking, like, looking at my watch, like, oh, that's going to put me at 10 o'clock. Man, I'm
going to
be rushing.
She's probably saying, well, then pay your damn bill,
exactly,
Karen.
Absolutely. So she said it'd be about 2 hours. I said, okay. I just kind of, okay. But then 5 minutes later, came back on.
So there you go.
I did that one time with my water bill.
Uh-huh.
Just totally forgot to pay it one time. Just brain cramped and sitting on my porch, and the guy just comes up in the truck and just goes to the street, opens up the thing on the thunder, just cuts the water off.
You're like, what you doing?
What are you doing over there? And he was like, see him. And then I walked back in. We had no water. I was like, what happened?
What was that for?
And I looked, I was like, oh, you idiot. So that is inconvenient.
Yes.
No water.
I can deal with no electricity, but no water.
Yeah.
That's different.
Hey, cold showers aren't bad. You just got to get used to them.
A cold shower is better than no shower.
You're like, right about
can't get,
that. Yeah.
Can't get water.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't like the
cold
shower?
Depending on what time of year it is.
I've tried, because I've heard, you know, it's good for your skin. It wakes you up. I've tried it. I can't do it.
Yeah,
it's a maximum of like 30 seconds that I'm standing there absolutely miserable. Then I'm like, okay, nope, done. Turn the hot water all the way up. I cannot do a cold shower.
You got to ease into it. You go from like hot, then you go to a little bit of warm. And you're like, all right, if I can deal with this.
No, it's like no cold water. I mean, no hot water, period. It's like, if I don't have
I'm just saying to get into it.
Okay.
Like, I'm cold showered through and through. But like, you know, you get to the point where it's like hot.
You take a cold shower every day?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man,
Nick,
you're crazy.
That is awfully impressive.
Wow.
Yeah, you're crazy, Nick.
So during high school, this quick little tidbit. During high school, the soccer team, we were on like a state title run. We had this little challenge. Like, if we all just took a cold shower, whoever cracked first would basically have to run extra.
Okay.
At the time, I was a little heavier. I was like, I'm not running extra for this purpose. Uh-huh. So I just took a cold shower every day. It benefited me in the weight room. It benefited my diet, benefited my skin. I told my mom about it because she, you know, does hair for a living. Uh-huh. She's like, oh, yeah, really good for your skin. Starts glowing. I was like, oh, yeah, glow, whatever. But, yeah, I see some benefits for it.
There you go.
I have noticed that Nick's skin is very glowy.
Yeah, it is glowing.
You are awfully glowy, Nick.
Thanks.
Glowy Nick.
Now we know the secret.
Absolutely.
See, those are benefits that I'm willing to pass on.
Cold showers and olive oil, Willie. Cold showers and olive oil.
Spoken like a true Italian. All right, so like I mentioned, we are just over 1 week away from the NFL draft, 1 week from tomorrow. And yesterday we were breaking down an article in The Athletic put out by Alec Lewis, and it breaks down, you know, what's the best strategy for drafting? And it went back through, you know, these data analysts who crunched all the numbers and looked at all different things and trading up and trading back and which pick is most valuable, so on and so forth, crunching all of these numbers from the drafts between 1988 and 2004. And some of the findings that they came up with, some of their conclusions, one was trading back is more advantageous through all of the numbers that they crunch. So we kind of pose that question as far as the Titans are concerned in this year's draft, in the first round, in the second round, should the Titans trade back? And I think that has to be, you know, the follow-up question should be like, well, who's available? Who is there at seven? Are you going to trade back if Joe Alt's at seven? I don't really think that that's a wise move. Do you have a trade partner? How far do you trade back? What's the compensation? All of these different layers that come with the question of should the Titans trade back? So this is a question that Nick Suss of the Tennessean looked into in a recent article. It's a great article. Headline is how far back in the NFL draft order can Tennessee Titans trade and still pick a top-tier prospect? So Nick goes through all of, as I just lost it, Nick goes through all of the teams picking after the Tennessee Titans and looks at all of their needs. Number eight, the Falcons, their top needs, wide receiver, edge rusher, cornerback, the Bears at number nine. Of course, we know they needed a quarterback. We know they'll address that need with the first overall pick. But with the ninth overall pick, they could take an edge rusher. They could take a receiver. The Jets at 10. They have needs on the offensive line, wide receiver, and safety. Even though they got Tyron Smith in free agency, still some of their needs. The Vikings, we know that they need tackles or a quarterback. Probably will plan on drafting a quarterback in this year's draft. The Broncos at 12, we know that they need a quarterback. They need defensive players. So Nick's conclusion is, when looking at the teams picking below the Titans, looking at the needs of those teams, looking at the players that most likely will be available at those teams, Nick writes, so how far can Tennessee Titans trade down and get Joe Alt? Nothing is ever really safe in the NFL draft. Teams can always trade in front of the Titans if they move back or go off script and pick the best player available over need. But if the team's picking after the Titans at seven, stick to their spots and pick according to their most pressing needs, there's no reason the Titans wouldn't be able to move back two or three spots at least, and six spots at most to get their guy. So Nick Suss is writing that he thinks the Titans could trade back to 13 with the Raiders and still get Joe Alt. Do we agree?
I mean, it can happen. But as we know, the NFL draft is a circus. It's the predictable becomes the unpredictable. The only predictability is that Caleb Williams, I predict he goes number one. And I'm probably 99.9% sure that that's going to happen. So there's still a 0.01% it won't, but more than likely it will. So you got to deal with the unpredictability of the draft. It takes one move to throw off the draft, at least for the first 15 picks. Based upon what he wrote, which was really good, and, you know, it's sort of certain scenarios that would happen in order for the Titans to be able to move down that far and still get their guy in Alt, if indeed they choose to go with him. It depends on those teams in front of the Titans. And then I think you got to do it. It has to be done systematically. It has to be done. It can't be done too soon moving. And obviously, you can't do it too late, but you can't do it too soon, because what you don't want to do is move back and then somebody else jump ahead of you.
Or lose your leverage.
Exactly, and you lose your leverage. Yeah. So you got to do it sort of the perfect timing, you know. So I think they going down to 13. Oh man, that may be a little bit too far. I can see 9, 10, 11, you know, but 13, I think you're kind of pushing it.
As I said yesterday, I like the idea of trading down. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be realistic, though, and be ready to not get one guy. If it is Alt, I mean, we're all assuming that Alt is a guy that they either have to have or would like to have, but I think it's more of the would like to have, but if you can't get him, like if you trade down, you have to say to yourself, this is worth it even if we don't get Alt. To me, that would be, if you're going down that far, things can happen, right? Somebody else trades up that does want Alt, right? You can say, well, this team doesn't want Alt, and that team's going to take a quarterback, and this you can do all that, but still somebody throws you a curveball. So you have to be prepared to say, do we like who we know is going to be in that spot? Even if it's not Alt, are there two or three other guys that we know mathematically will be in there? To me, that would be worth it. That would be worth it. If you love the board, you know, let's just say, for example, that it's you have three or four guys and Bowers is one of them, maybe one of the wide receivers, maybe it's the other tackle that everybody's talking about, that you say, well, you know, we think this guy is just as good. I think that's the scenario where you would drop that far down. And if you're getting another pick or two, a good pick or two, then to me, that is something you have to consider.
I think that's the key point there, Willie. And it's the board, not mm-hmm. the player or the prospect. Because could the Titans trade back to 13 and could Joe Alt be available for the taking at 13? Sure. Like, anything is possible. Could the Chicago Bears end up taking Drake May at 1? Sure, but they could. I don't think it's very likely. Just like I don't think that Joe Alt falling to 13 is very likely. And if that's the Titans' draft strategy of, oh, well, we can just, you know, trade back to 13 and then Joe Alt's going to be there, then I think they're overly naive. And I think that's a horrendous strategy to say, oh yeah, well, the guy that we for sure want is going to be there, so we're going to go ahead and do it. Nothing is guaranteed in the NFL draft. So I think that's the key, Willie. If you're sitting at, you know, let's say the Giants are picking at 6, mm-hmm. the Raiders pick up the phone and they say, we'll give you, let's just say, a second in next year's draft to come up to 7. And there are a list of 5 to 6 prospects that you love, that you think can be game changers for you right now, whoever that is. If that's 4 or 5 different tackles, if that's a mix of 3 tackles and Brock Bowers and a handful of wide receivers and maybe Dallas Turner in there, but you feel like you'd be happy walking away from the first round with any of those players, then yeah, then I think that you can live with that. Depending on the compensation, if you feel like that's fair compensation to move back and miss out on an opportunity to take Joe Alt, if Joe Alt is in fact there for the taking at 7. So I think you have to really think about, who do we really like? Like, do we need Joe Alt and he's available to us at 7? If you need him, then you take him and you don't trade back and just cross your fingers that he's going to be there at 13. Because like Nick Suss mentions in his article, and like you brought up, Willie, you're not the only one in the draft that can move around. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody else can move around, too. There are other tackle-needy teams in this draft that might be sitting at, and I don't have the draft order up in front of me, but let's say they're sitting at 16, and they think, oh, well, I'll trade up to 9 with the Bears so I can take Joe Alt.
16 happens to be Denver.
16 okay. Seattle. All right. Seattle. Is it Seattle? Yeah, 16 to Seattle, unless I'm looking at a different one.
You're correct. 16 Seattle? To Seattle.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Why am I seeing? I'm looking at Nick's article here.
12 is Denver.
Around.
Yeah, Denver's at 12.
Denver's at 12. Denver.
Seattle's 16. You know.
I picked a range. Nick has another trade in there, Seattle and Denver, that flip-flopped those two picks.
Okay. Those two
okay, Nick, I follow you, Nick. Okay, I got you now, Nick.
Yeah.
but it. That's why this article I thought was worth discussing a lot yesterday of what's the in the big picture, like for this year's team. I think it's if you're just looking at this year's Titans team, you're saying, well, look, we've got to have a left tackle. This is what they've addressed all these things. They have not addressed left tackle. Take the left tackle.
Yeah.
But in the broader sense, in the big picture, the macro look that this article really shed some light on, the reality is the chances of the number 7 player and the number 13 player at the seven play being way, way better is minuscule in the big picture over time, right? I think if you listed all the number seven overall picks and all the number 13 overall picks over a 20-year span, there's probably not a lot of difference in the performance. You know, we could probably argue back and forth. We'd probably debate a few players. But I think you would probably say that it's almost about the same, right? And so if you look at it that way, and you get an extra pick, you get that third-round pick back, which is, I think, what Nick is proposing that you would get. You would get the third-round pick back that you don't have right now. Then I think there's a lot of value there. Well, especially if you're not, you know, dead set on having to get the one guy.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, that's the sort of the crux in all this. We don't know if Ault is their guy. How do they have them ranked on the board? And who do they have ranked on the board in regards to that seventh pick? Is it just Ault and Ault alone and then everybody else sort of falls down? Or is it, you know, horizontal? It's Ault, it's who else? Fashnu. It could
Latham,
and then it could be another guy.
Marius Mims.
Yeah, and then but then it could be another guy, totally not a like a defensive end or another a Dallas wide receiver.
Turner.
Exactly. So you have all these, you have these three, four, five individuals on a horizontal plane. Now, if you have them like, if you have it like that, then okay, I think the likelihood of you moving down, it's more likely for it to happen because you have three or four guys that you potentially take at that position rather than just one. If you're thinking just Ault, you can't move down too far because you risk losing him. But if you have three or four guys on there, you're more willing to move down because you figure, if I don't get Ault, if he doesn't follow me, we feel comfortable with the Latham or a Fashnu or one of these, you know, one of these other top two or three tackles. Like, we're not just hell-bent on taking off. Because if you're hell-bent on taking off, you got to be very calculated on how you move and when you move. Because if you move at the wrong time, i.e. what happened last year when all that stuff got out about them wanting to take a quarterback, it got out too soon. And Houston ended up flipping the script and they end up drafting the two guys that are cornerstones of their franchise. Well, you can't let this out early if you have Ault as your number. Like, he's the guy that you gotta draft.
Well, I'll ask you guys, if you're hell-bent on taking Joe Ault, which from every mock draft that we've seen, I think everyone else is hell-bent on the Titans taking Joe Ault. I don't know how they feel. But if you're hell-bent on taking Joe Ault, can you move?
You can't.
I don't think
stay.
You can.
Yeah, you got to stay at the seventh pick. If that
he's
is the guy you want.
He's more valuable than any other pick that you're going to pick up later in the draft.
Yeah, you have to stay put at the seventh pick if indeed he's the guy that you want to get. Or your margin of error is very slim. You can't go down to 13. You may not be able to go down to 11. You got to stay in between that 7 and 10. Just to if that's the guy that you like, we got to have him. Or else, you know? But if you have two or three guys, top tackles, you would be more willing to move. You have a little bit more leeway in what you can do and in how you're going to draft. So the three guys are there. Yeah, I would move out of that space if I got three guys that are sort of on the same tier. They're not too far off from one another. So, you know, they got to be very careful with this because you don't want to happen what happened last year in regards to stuff getting out. And then you can't. You try to move and it's too late.
It does feel like this go around, things feel pretty hush-hush.
Yeah, and it should be.
I think everyone assumes the Titans are going to take the best tackle available just because that's such an obvious and glaring need.
But the Titans hadn't said anything about that.
That's our feeling.
Uh-huh.
That's the draft evaluators' feelings. Mm-hmm. Those are NFL insiders' feelings. That's nothing that they've tipped off to us. If anything, I feel like the Titans have kind of quieted, or at least attempted to quiet, some offensive line talk by saying, yeah, it's a deep tackle draft. Mm-hmm. We really like the receiver, so on and so forth. It feels like they're not tipping their hand one way or another, and that's a good thing. But I will say this. If you can move back to 13 and still get Joe Ault, Great. GM of the year. Go Rand Carthon. All right, we'll continue this conversation coming up next. Want to get your thoughts on this as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Again, Nick Suss's article in the Tennessean. He thinks that the Titans can trade back as far as 13, and Joe Alt could still be available there just based off of the needs of the teams picking after the Titans currently at 7. Want to get your reaction to that. Plus, another scenario that we've been talking about, not just trading back, but also the what if Joe Alt isn't there at 7 scenario. Matt Miller, an ESPN NFL draft insider, did his own breakdown. What his prediction is, or his mock draft is, for that exact scenario. We'll get into that coming up next. Adam Vingan will join us in 30 minutes. We'll preview Vancouver Canucks. We'll talk Nashville Predators and the NHL playoffs, and we'll get into that at noon. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
What are they saying in regards to draft, whether to move up or move back? What is better? What would be beneficial to some of the guys that you've spoken with, some of the GMs that you've spoken with?
I think most guys, because they understand the, you know, the unpredictability of drafting players, they want more picks. Mm-hmm. And so moving back a couple spots, picking up a fifth rounder, moving back a couple spots, picking, like, that matters. Because, like, you know, when you draft, you know, Kevin Byard, you know, in a later round, well, if you messed up the first round, you got the ability to say, yeah, but look what I did in the later round. You know what I mean? Like, check that guy out. Most guys want more picks because, like, if we – like, just think about certain general managers and how we talk about them. Hey, John Lynch, hey, like, he drafted Brock Purdy. Like, he also drafted Trey Lance. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
Like the wins, you know, and some of it's just the narrative in general and that type of thing. But, like, you can tout the wins. You can tout the good players. But it's when you get somebody wrong in a critical spot and you don't have other picks to counterbalance the getting that wrong, then, you know, then it gets you in trouble. Right. And so, like, if you know, if it's like you can get a lot right, but if you know, if you're just getting a couple things right and you get Josh Freeman and Aurelius Ben wrong, then you're out. Like, it's just like that's how this works. And I think that most guys would rather move back, have more picks, because you're bound to hit on somebody in that environment.
That was ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck on our show earlier. Caroline Willie D. Mace had joined Nashville Super Speedway in the city of Lebanon for Speedway on the Square this Saturday, April 20th from 1 to 6 p.m. in downtown Lebanon. Stop by and bring the family for a day filled with inflatables, face painting, balloon art, live music, and a ticket giveaway to the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at 3:30 p.m. So what Tim is saying there makes a ton of sense. Like, you might say, oh, picking up a sixth rounder. Well, that sixth rounder could be David Long Jr. Or it could be Brady Breeze. Like, you never know. I would say more often than not, seventh rounders, you're taking a flyer. It's a guy that you think could be good, but if he's not, it's fine, and you can figure it out and move on from him, and it'll be fine. So I understand Tim's approach, and I don't think he's wrong, that you can find really quality players later in the draft if those are picks that you pick up by moving back in the draft. But the big question is, who's available at 7? And is the player that you could get at 7, whether that's Alt or not, more valuable than what you could pick up later in the draft?
I think Tim did a good job of explaining it. I think of something like a three-point shooting contest. If I hit 4 for 10 and somebody else hits 3 for 6, like in basketball, you're like, man, 3 for 6, that's good. You know, you're 50%. I'm 4 for 10. My percentage is lower. You missed 6, man. You had an air ball in there, you know. You have to be prepared for people to be talking about the air ball and the ones you missed. But if I have 4 hits, 4 makes, and you have 3 makes – my team is better. That, yeah. You would think, right? Now, there's we can dial down to all of the how good are the hits, right? Is it a single? Is it a double, triple, home run?
Yeah.
All of that gets put in there. But I think by and large, that throw at the dartboard, the extra throws, especially where the Titans roster is right now, I want more throws at the dartboard. So if I can get it, that's what I'm looking for. That I'm looking for all opportunities to do that.
Yeah, and those later round picks, I mean, those picks eventually they become critical in later rounds, I think. In regards to, okay, not necessarily, let me take that back. Not necessarily critical. I was thinking about the first pick. If I have, based upon what you said, Willie, if I have 10 picks, I need to make sure that first and possibly those two picks are hit as possible.
One pick in the first and then nine in
exactly.
The sixth.
I have to make sure that those early picks that I have, they are hit.
Yeah.
Now, the later picks, I can sort of play around with. I may, you know, I heard Chase and Big Joe talking about Milton.
Oh,
Milton is one of those picks that you can say, you know what? Since I got 10 picks, I think I did very good on my four picks. Let me take a flyer on a Milton in the seventh round or the sixth round, you know, late in the sixth or in the seventh. You can do that because you got multiple picks. And a lot of times, because of that, it's going to sort of throw the numbers off a little bit because you really dug in with those first three picks because you had to get those right. Then the other picks you get, it's like, okay, let's just take a flyer on this guy. We like who he is. We had the interview. You know, he has some upside. Let's see if we can get more out of him.
Yeah, like if you miss on a sixth round
exactly.
pick, you're not getting fired.
Absolutely. So, but you need to hit or close to it on those early round picks because if you don't, eventually that's what's going to erode your roster, i.e. the Tennessee Titans the last couple of years.
I think the Titans need to hit on their first round pick. I'm not going to say seventh because it might not necessarily be the seventh, but they need to hit on their first and they need to hit on their second.
Their early round picks they need to hit on. I truly believe
because they're behind.
Exactly, because they're behind. Yes,
I think realistically, if you take 10 drafts, your batting average, you need to come out of there with like three or four good players on an average, right? But so. They're below average because we've gone through it many times. Those three drafts in a row, you're like, ooh, kind of dry, kind of in the desert here. So you need to make up for it by a couple of good drafts strung together. That's how they've got to make it work. And you have more chance of getting big impact guys earlier in the draft than later in the draft.
And when we talk about, you know, at seven, you know, it's easy for us to pick apart, you know, who you take or trade back or not, or, you know, this is a position of need. Let's say 4 or 5 years from now, let's say Joe Walt's gone at five. Mm-hmm. That pushes Malik Nabers down to the Titans at seven. And I'm just using those two as an example. If Malik Nabers ends up being the next Justin Jefferson, in 5 years, we're not going to be talking about how the Titans needed a left tackle. But I understand how that would be the initial reaction. Which brings me to Matt Miller's recent mock draft in the first 10 picks of the first round. He explores that exact scenario, which I think is kind of the nightmare scenario for a lot of Titans fans, is Joe Alt's off the board at five. We talked to TD about this earlier in the week. I asked him, you know, if Joe Alt's not at seven, what do you do? And he was like, it feels too good to be true that he's going to be there. That your number one position of need could be addressed by the best player in this draft, and he just falls to you. And TD was like, I trade back best player? Like, I don't know. It's a sticky situation to be in. So in Matt Miller's mock draft, he has Joe Alt going to the Chargers at five. I don't predict that happening, but we can get into that later. So he has the Titans sticking at seven and taking Rome Odunze. Before we get into what Matt Miller said and the justification for that, if that's what the Titans came out of the first round with, how would you feel?
About the particular player, I would feel good about the particular player. But honestly, I would be worried about the position that you didn't address right now. Because who's to say that, you know, those other tackles are going to be there unless you make a trade and end up moving back up in the first round or moving up in the second. But then what does that do? It takes away picks from you. So I would – the player, no. Because I think Roma Dunze is a hell of a player, or at least a hell of a college player. Will he be a hell of a, you know, NFL player? Yet to be seen, but the predictors are there to say he will be successful. But I'm talking about the position. And if Ault is still there, I don't see how you unless
– Ault was gone in this scenario.
Oh, Ault was gone. I don't see how you then either don't move out of that pick or – how do you have them ranked, your tackles? That's if you have Ault and the next guy close, then you go with the next guy. Ault's not there, you take the next guy. If the next guy is, say, two slots or three slots back, then you move back. But I don't think you can – they need a tackle. And I'm hell-bent on them needing a tackle because – I've seen this team. We've all seen this team over the last two seasons. Even we've seen this team, even when Taylor Lewan was hurt, they struggled at that position at times.
Heck yeah.
So they need to get them a left tackle. They need to get the best left tackle on the board. And that if that even if that means trading back, if Ault's gone, trading back into the spot that you feel comfortable taking that next tackle.
Assuming there's a trade partner.
Yeah, assuming there's a trade partner, yes.
Now Let me throw a hypothetical at you. Would you be okay if you didn't have – I mean, you're going to have a person standing there at left tackle, right? Yeah. Let's hope it's something better than Dillard. Let's just say it's still a filler for a year. I mean, they just traded for a tackle, right? They traded
Leroy Watson.
Couldn't tell you anything about
– Leroy Watson.
Couldn't tell you anything about him.
He took 55 offensive snaps
exactly.
last year.
Okay.
That's what
and
I
he still
you.
Fail.
Let's just assume that he's not the long-term
I'm
solution.
I'm sorry, Leroy. I'm sorry. I'm just – these are jokes, Leroy.
He's got the Bill Callahan seal
exactly.
approval.
Right.
He's got
Bill
my
Callahan absolutely. Maybe says I could work with this guy if we had to.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to have a placeholder slash filler for one more year in exchange for – who you thought was the best player, regardless of position, at 7? Like, you tell everybody up front. Look,
we still
are looking for a left tackle, but we felt like this guy. Because I look at a roster that desperately needs game changers.
Yes, it depends on who the place filler is, and it depends on who the other player is.
Yeah,
like, is it gonna be Dylan Radins? Mm-hmm. Is gonna be your placeholder?
This is again comes back to the philosophical question I keep asking, and I'm okay with it if you come out and say, which I don't think they will, but I think internally I'm okay with it, and I'd be presenting this to Amy Adams Strunk, is this team isn't going to fix every problem they have in 1 year. I need 2 years.
Yeah.
Now at the end of 2 years, if you're not happy with the direction we're going, then that's on us.
Yeah.
But you cannot tell me that everything can be fixed with this team, with all it's been through, all the changes they're making, the Derrick Henry era, the Mike Vrabel era, the Ryan Tannehill era, the Kevin Byard. We're not going to have a brand new team that is a perfect team, well-oiled machine in 1 year. So there's going to be some holes out there. So can you wait one more year to get the left tackle? It would be hard. But if in exchange for that, you got a dynamic player at 7 that you say, okay, this guy helps change the game, creates matchup problems, etc.
I
could live with that.
I can live with it.
Now, don't whiff on that guy.
I can't.
Whoever that is.
That's got to
right?
be
if
like,
it's a Dunze or whoever it is.
Right. And also, let's not forget that DeAndre Hopkins is in the final year of his contract. Calvin Ridley is 29, going to be 30 years old, as much as he wants to tell us that he's 25.
D-Hop especially. D-Hop, you can't be sitting there going, D-Hop, when the stadium opens, he's still going to be out there catching 100 balls. It's not going to happen, right?
Yeah. He's
a guy that's helping your young quarterback in the short term. Mm-hmm. But long term, you know, that's where a wide receiver that if you thought he was a special guy would be worth looking at there.
And I would be willing to work with that because of the Bill Callahan effect. Because I think I can be sold on, look, if we don't get the most elite tackle in this year's draft, we think we can find a pretty darn good one that can be pretty darn good for us because maybe that player has the makings of being a starting left tackle in the National Football League, and whatever his ceiling is, Bill Callahan is going to be able to coach him up to that ceiling. I don't think that player's on the roster. Mm-hmm. You can find that player perhaps later in the draft. Is that player going to be as good for you as a Joe Ault or an Olufashinu? Probably not. Mm-hmm. But I would be able to live with it if I'm getting a game-changing player, a touchdown scorer in return?
Nah. Give me that tackle. I understand what y'all are saying because you can, okay, we really didn't need that, but it's there and it's pretty good. So I'm going to take it and sort of, I'm going to patchwork this side. I understand what y'all are saying, but we've been to too many years where they've tried to patchwork it and it has not worked to the effect that it's gotten two of your quarterbacks injured. They became collateral damage. I don't want any more collateral damage here. And potentially as I'm still evaluating my young quarterback, I need to give my young quarterback from a protection standpoint. This is where it all started. We forget about what are the fundamentals of football other than scoring touchdowns, scoring points. We know that. Take that out of there. The fundamentals is block and get off blocks. Mm-hmm. Make the tackles, make a guy miss. Those are the fundamentals. You got to understand, they weren't throwing the football when football first started. They wasn't. It wasn't forward passes. They had to, you know, come to that. So get back to the basics. Get your left tackle, and let's start from there. I understand those other little shiny pieces over there. I get it. Roman Dunze, that's like a Ferrari. I get it. It would be nice. A Ferrari in my driveway would be nice, but I don't need a Ferrari. I need something that's going to get me from A to B, cost-effective, good, that's going to last. I don't need to be paying over and over again for a Ferrari each and every time. Give me that big dually and put him right there, and I have that big dually for the next 15 years, hauling everything.
Why couldn't Roma Dunze be there for the next 15 years?
He ain't a dually. He's a Maserati. He's not a Maserati because that's Marv. He's a Ferrari, you know. You can use it. It's there. It looks pretty. But I can't haul the big stuff in a Ferrari. Can't do it. I can only put one other person in that Ferrari. I can't put a whole bag of people or a whole thing of people in a Ferrari.
I hear it. Totally. 100%.
I need my tackle. I need my dually. We've been through two seasons without a big dually on the left side. We need one.
I hear you 100%. That brings up a fair point about, you know, the philosophical question that we've been talking about, the philosophical question that Brian Callahan was faced with in Cincinnati in 2021. Do you take the touchdown scorer or do you take the offensive lineman? Let's get into that coming up next. Do you think if Brian Callahan and the entire Cincinnati Bengals brass, if they could have done it differently, would they have? Hmm. We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well before we catch up with Adam Vingan at noon. Caroline Willie D. Mays, this week's Nashville's Best Deal is Prince's Hot Chicken, the original and iconic hot chicken joint. Get half off a $25 gift card right now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Gift card is only good for the Tanger Outlets in Antioch and Inside Assembly Food Hall in downtown Nashville. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We'll catch up with Adam Vingan in 10 minutes. We'll get his thoughts as we wrap up the regular season and head into the Stanley Cup playoffs. But first, we brought up a question before the break, and we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it when Brian Callahan was on our show about a month or so ago, about the conflict that the Bengals were very famously faced with going into the 2021 draft. Do you take the elite left tackle in Penei Sewell, or do you take the elite touchdown scorer in Ja'Marr Chase? And Brian Callahan said, if all things are equal, I'll go the elite touchdown scorer over the elite non-touchdown scorer. But that's, of course, when all things are equal. Not all things are equal all the time. But I do wonder, if the Bengals could do things differently, would they? Because the Bengals' offensive line is still trash. And Joe Burrow is now getting the reputation of always injured because he's injured a lot. Tore his ACL in his rookie season, got hurt last season, had that horrible sack in the Super Bowl when Aaron Donald just demolished him. So I do wonder. I mean, obviously, it feels like a silly question because Ja'Marr Chase is one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, that they got to the Super Bowl the year that Ja'Marr Chase was drafted. But if they could have done things differently, would they have taken the left tackle? They're not going to tell you.
Oh, they'll never tell you. I'm trying to look at the tackles that were selected. Penei Sewell was the tackle taken, the first tackle taken right after Ja'Marr. Not right after, but a few picks after Ja'Marr Chase. And then you have Rashad Slater.
Slater's a solid tackle.
Elijah Vera Tucker. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I have Alex Leatherwood.
I think Alex Leatherwood kind of sticks.
Kristen Darasaw.
Christian Darrisaw's
pretty Darrisaw, solid. Yeah. And that was, well, Tevin Jenkins. Well, no, that was second round. So there were, what, three, four old linemen taken in the first round that year?
I think Alex Leatherwood maybe been a center?
Yeah.
Or a guard?
So, like you said, I don't think they would tell us.
No.
They can't come out and say anything because Jamar Chase is still there and he's balling. And they've got one of the top five receivers, six receivers in the National Football League. And he's produced. But on the other hand, their quarterback keeps getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And I know this last injury, I don't think it was, you know, the injury at the beginning of the season wasn't because of the offensive line. It was just some fluky awkwardness. He was rolling out in practice. And
then there was the wrist.
Yeah, the wrist.
The wrist or the hand or exactly. whatever.
But even with being. Those, but even with those injuries, those specific injuries, Caroline Willie, you still, it's like, I still want, should I have still taken the offensive tackle? Because those injuries can be compounded if we're not protecting our quarterback. That a wrist injury can get, it becomes a sprain now. What if he falls on it and he re-injures it? Or it becomes a break because he's gotten hit from the blind side because the tackle whiffed. And this is about, this is probably the eighth time he's whiffed mm-hmm. on a pass rusher. So those injuries that he had, even though they wasn't because of the offensive line, they can be compounded because you don't have a good offensive line. But I don't think Cincinnati would look at drafting Jamar Chase as a, we should have drafted Penei Sewell. I don't think they, you know, it's like.
It's hard to justify.
Exactly, because both Chase guys are really good. Both guys are good at their respective positions. So you can't say, well, dang it, they should have drafted Penei Sewell because they're getting production out of Jamar Chase.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
You know, if you could. Chase,
now,
is,
Chase was just
Chase
a
is
bust,
a game changer.
Then, okay,
he's a game changer.
Right. Exactly.
So I think that is the ultimate goal of any draft is can I get one or two guys? One. If you just told me I could get one each year of somebody who really changes the game for you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of ways you can do that. A tackle can do that. Obviously, a touchdown-making receiver can do that. But somebody who the other team has to say, we got to deal with D-Mace. What are we going to do to try to curtail this? If you have several of those guys, it just makes your job so much easier. So that's the ultimate. So regardless of position, if you come away with those guys, just one per year, you're building a roster.
But it goes back to, is it easier in a sense to find a receiver?
See, that's
is it
a great
easier
question.
To find a tackle?
I think it's easier to find a receiver.
Yeah.
I would say
think,
just off the top of my head,
couple of years.
No,
yeah.
I have not done the research on it, but that would be my thought.
Well, exactly.
If we're going to take the 2021 draft, for example, that's the same year that the Titans picked a tackle in the second round, and that was Dylan Raiden's.
But they didn't draft him in the first. I see.
But I'm saying if the Bengals, if we're talking about taking a receiver in the second round versus a tackle in the second round, I know that's incredibly anecdotal. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But
so the further you get out of the first round, the harder it's going to be to find a tackle.
Sure.
Versus maybe a receiver that you can find in the second, third, or fourth rounds that could have more production for you. But obviously, there's going to be examples on both sides of finding pretty solid tackles or old linemen in general in the second or third rounds and finding really bad ones and vice versa with wide receivers as well. But I do think it's fascinating. They would never tell you. But if they did take Penei Sewell, would things be different? Would Joe Burrow have stayed upright? Would they have still gone to the Super Bowl? Would we be thinking about the Bengals or Joe Burrow, for that matter, in the same fashion that we do? We'll never know.
I don't think I would enter into that game, right? If you're if you could go back and do it again, would you play that game? I don't think the Bengals would choose to go back and do that.
But I wonder if Brian Callahan has that in the back of his head as he approaches this draft, as he went through this just a couple of years ago and is faced with it again. How much does he look back on that decision and how it kind of paved the way for the Bengals and how that could
history repeating
potentially do the same?
Yeah,
exactly.
We must learn from history.
And if history repeated itself and the Titans found themselves in the Super Bowl after the Titans take Roma Dunze at 7, I got no complaints. No complaints whatsoever. All right, we are, maybe we're a week, maybe we're 2 weeks, maybe we're a few days. Who knows how far away we are from the Predators in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but Adam Vingan will join us coming up next. It looks like, contrary to what ESPN says, it looks like the Canucks are the most likely opponent for the Nashville Predators. What does that matchup look like? Adam Vingan will join us coming up next, as he will every single Wednesday throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.